is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
I welcome my good colleagues, Bill Raggio, the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy, a senior fellow keeping the Long War Journal, and Ambassador Hossein Haqqani, former ambassador from Pakistan to the United States, now a senior fellow and in charge of the Eurasia Project at the Hudson Institute. Gentlemen, we begin with good news. It's rare from South Asia. It's rare, but here it is. American citizen released by Taliban 9 months after arrest in Afghanistan. Amir Amiri, an American citizen detained 9 months in Afghanistan, was released Sunday and is on his way back to the United States, according to the Secretary of State, Mr. Rubio. Mr. Rubio's quote, "Today we welcome home Amir Amiri, an American who was wrongfully detained in Afghanistan. I want to thank Qatar for helping secure his freedom." I begin here because South Asia is a many-splendored and non-transparent creature. Afghanistan is not trusted anywhere. Kabul is in the hands of men who routinely welcome and host al-Qaeda and worse. At the same time, there are American citizens that have been held for some time, and there was very little hope that anything could be done for them from the outside. Mr. Rubio has been successful on the inside. Why? What is the leverage here? Mr. Ambassador, I begin with you because your thoughts these last weeks about the president's remark that it'd be good to get back into Bagram Air Base, which was left in August of 2021 by order of the Biden administration, saying that they were following through on the Doha deal negotiated by the Trump administration. Since then, there have been many questions about the citizens left behind who were owed a security by the United States or its allies, Great Britain. And some of those citizens had green cards. Some of those people were left behind, could have had access to the U.S. under ordinary circumstances. The detention of Amir Amiri is representative of something new, not from 21. Do you believe there's a connection between the Bagram remark, which, of course, although generally understood to be just the president's rhetoric, certainly is a challenge to the Kabul government, which has no secure hold on its own air defenses? The Bagram remark is connected in any fashion to the release of this young man, Amir Amiri. Good evening, Mr. Ambassador.
Good evening. The United States is engaging gingerly with the Taliban. President's remark was a way of nudging or pushing the Taliban into releasing or start releasing hostages. The Taliban are also not sort of just giving in. We see them releasing the first of 12 such hostages that I know of, and there might be more that the U.S. government knows and hasn't spoken in public about. So this is going to be a long-drawn process. It's going to be a bit like the negotiations with Hamas for hostage release. It's always one or two or three or four hostages at a time there, and here it's only one hostage. Positive, good thing that we have got the hostage back. We've got work cut out for us in getting the rest of the hostages and negotiations with the Taliban with bluster, with some threats, with some cajoling, and the U.S. does pay them off a little bit as well. All of that will move things only so far.
Bill, good morning to you. The idea of reclaiming Bagram has been ballyhooed very carefully by a number of voices, some of which are considered in the president's camp, pointing out physical facts. Bagram is vulnerable to attack from all sides, especially led by the People's Republic of China in the event of conflict in the Pacific. Bagram Air Base is certainly surrounded by hostile forces, including al-Qaeda. So it never seemed practical as an idea. Have I said all that correctly, Bill? And was the military's position was once we were out of there, there's no going back? Good evening, Bill.
Good evening, John, and hello, Hussein. Before I address Bagram, I just want to say really quick about that hostage release. The question is what is the U.S. going to give up in return? It's very likely that that's going to be an individual who's held at Guantanamo named Mohammed Rahim. He was Omar's draw, according to this, all of the U.S. intelligence, close to Osama bin Laden, helped him escape from Tora Bora. Mullah Omar's driver, the former head of the founder and former head of the Taliban. He's one individual the U.S. military doesn't want to give up, and it's very likely that he will be walking free sometime soon. So there's always a cost, and the Taliban usually wins in these negotiations. As far as returning to Bagram, you know, as Hussein mentioned here the other week, this is very likely a negotiating ploy by the Trump administration in order to extract some type of concessions. I don't see what they can extract from the Taliban. The Taliban doesn't want to return. The U.S. military wanted to maintain control of Bagram, both during the evacuation of U.S. personnel in 2021 under the Biden administration. President Biden, unfortunately, chose to evacuate via Kabul, the airport in Kabul, which used to be known as Hamid Karzai International Airport. And we all saw what a debacle that wound up being. Would the military like to return to Bagram? Sure. But look, I think it depends on who you talk to in the military. Maybe at higher levels, there may be some generals that think this could be a good idea. But most of the people I talk to that deal with real issues with the Taliban, with the region, I'm talking, you know, more at the analyst level, who understand the nitty gritty of the region, think that this is madness. You would be an island in a sea of terrorists who are going to want to take pot shots at U.S. forces. It's just a bad idea, John. I don't really understand this desire for President Trump to bring the issue of the withdrawal from Afghanistan. It was a bad look for him. It was a bad look for President Biden. But here we are. Sometimes these things have a life of their own.
Detail.
And protecting, and if the cost of protecting a base exceeds the advantage of the base, then there's no point in having
exactly.
that base. And it will be a heavy cost because you will have to have multiple layers of security. The Taliban are not the Taliban of the 90s. So it's not like they don't have, for example, they have, according to recent reports, they have been able to put together, piece together helicopters from the helicopters that had been left behind. They cannibalized some to put parts into the others. And then various jihadi groups there also have more sophisticated weaponry than before. So protecting the base is going to become a priority. What use will a base be if the cost of protecting it is very high?
In detail, Bill, your remarks about the people left behind, especially those that were owed thanks and security by the U.S. Are there still hundreds? I don't remember a number.
Yeah, it depends on if you're talking directly related to the American, like, are they, were they green card holders or the those who worked with U.S. for, if it's those, if you expand that out to those who worked with U.S. forces, it's in the tens of thousands. We left a lot of Afghans who supported us behind. The Taliban is hunting them daily.
Bill Rajo and Hussein Haqqani, my colleagues, speaking of the Bagram idea and the Afghanistan government. But since these last days have been dominated by reaction to a speech by the Prime Minister of Israel at the United Nations, a combative speech is the least has been said, and that the war in Gaza has very much been a battle cry for people around the region who were opposed to Israel, and a reason for the U.S. to concentrate its aid on Israel in support. When we come back, what does the speech by Mr. Netanyahu mean for the road ahead? And this new idea of a 21-point plan from the White House to resolve the conflict, what does that mean to the people, not only in the region, but in the Ummah? This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.